Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on music. What does it do to your IQ? We'll be back with more on that when we return. When people call the law school and they ask how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air, keep in mind that most of the topics that you hear on the radio, I teach in detail in one of my classes here at the law school. For example, when you hear me talking about the common law or Alfred the Great, the common law was developed by Alfred the Great in 872 AD into 49 principles or statutes, of which 22 of those statutes, 22 of those principles are incorporated into our federal constitution and our Bill of Rights. The common law was taken from the Mosaic Code given to Moses at Mount Sinai, and it's recorded in the Bible in Exodus 19 verse 16 through Exodus 24 verse 8. And it includes such things as negligence, insurance, and taxes. You know, taxes such as income, property, and social security taxes. These IRS tax laws are a counterfeit of the tithing laws of Scripture, and they work a theft on everyone who participates in them. Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and social security, and that's the basis of my tax school. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status, why don't you write for my free general law CD package? It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, we took a look to ask the question, how about crime? Is crime motivated by or exacerbated by rock music or heavy metal? The answer to that is a resounding yes. And in this article, Dennis R. Martin goes on to say, with growing lawlessness and violence in our society, every American is at risk of losing his property and his life to criminals. Police officers risk their lives daily to preserve peace and property rights for all Americans. The officers deserve protection from abusive speech when that abuse imperils not only their ability to protect citizens, but also their ability to protect their very lives. Well, last time I took exception to that, and I gave a couple of examples. Let me give you another one. I mentioned that police officers need to take a look at themselves and ask, what is it that has produced this hatred? Why do we have this rebellious music to inspire blacks in the inner city or Hispanics and other minorities to rebel against the police, our Constitution, and our basic American way of life? You know, everybody wants to come to America, no matter where they're from in the world, they want to come to America. They really want to come here and participate in whatever it is that produces this standard of living. When I was a youngster, about 16 to 18 years old, I was driving home one night from Eureka, California to Lolita. On Table Bluff Hill, on old Highway 101, two-lane road, I fell asleep and ran off the road about 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, I woke up when I ran off the road, got out of my car, and I could see that my car was stuck off the road and I couldn't get going again. So I said, well, it's about 5 miles home. Maybe I better get to huffing it because, you know, it's 2 o'clock and at 4, just 2 hours from now, I've got to bring the cows in and milk them. Well, about that time, I saw headlights coming up the hill, and it was a highway patrolman. He stopped, and he asked me if I was hurt, and I told him no. And he said, well, you think you can get your car out of there? And I said, nope. No, sir, she's stuck. And he said, well, where do you live? And I said, well, I live down Lighthouse Road. I work over at Roach's. And he said, well, get in and let me give you a ride home. I got in the cop car, and he gave me a ride home. And I said, well, thank you very much. I'll come out after milking this morning with a tractor, and I'll have somebody come down here, and we'll pull it out. And he left. Now, that was about 1955, 56, 57, 58, along in there sometime, the mid to late 50s. There's an example of a policeman who was there to protect and serve. He didn't give me an alcohol or a sobriety test. He didn't give me a ticket for careless and imprudent driving. He didn't arrest me and take me off to jail. And he didn't have my car towed away by some towing company that was going to charge me, in those days, $25 to tow it away and $1 a day to store it. Today, if that same event transpired, the policeman, when he came by, would arrest me and take me to jail, charge me with drunk driving, or at least driving carelessly and imprudently. He'd call a tow company and probably get a kickback from the towing company for reporting the car, and then it would be towed away, and I would have to pay the $75 plus the storage, you know, $5 or $10 a day. Let me tell you, Mr. Policeman, I'm an old man, and I'm a white male taxpayer, and over the last 23 or 4 years, I've been involved in the civil rights struggle, and I can tell you that the police are not the friends of George Gordon. They're not the friends of 65-year-old or old people. And if they are, it's going to be a rare example. Let me tell you a story about what comes through my office across my desk here. And remember I said, I think you policemen need to take a look at yourselves and ask yourselves, just what are you people doing that is creating this hatred and this animosity toward the police? Now, I'm not suffering from hatred and animosity toward the police. I know how to deal with you policemen. I sue you under the Civil Rights Act. I bring the insurance company to bear against you. But I don't think that the blacks and Hispanics and the other minorities in the country know how to do that. I'm not complaining about the police. They're not bothering me. But the police are bothering a lot of other people. Here's a classic example of police harassment. A black man is drunk, sitting on his front porch, drinking beer. And a policeman comes by, and the black man gives him the finger. The police stop, get out of the car, walk across the street, open his gate, come across his property, and arrest this guy right off of his front porch and charge him with several crimes and haul him off to jail. Let me assure you, boys and girls, that giving a cop the finger sitting on your front porch is protected free speech. Now, I don't think that people should be giving the cops the finger as they drive down the street, but that's not a crime. The police don't like it, but it's not a crime. He hasn't harmed anybody. He hasn't offended the peace, safety, and dignity of the people of the state of Ohio. This was in Columbus, Ohio. Columbus or Cleveland, I forget which now. Probably once a week, there's a story like that comes across my desk. Rodney King was a criminal. Rodney King was in a high-speed flight trying to get away from the police, and the police beat him up, and they arrested him, and they took him to jail. He collected $3 million for the police abuse, and indeed, he was entitled to every damn dollar he collected from the police and the taxpayers of Los Angeles. I wish they'd have burned him $6 million. Now, can you policemen start asking yourselves, why is it that these people don't like us? Do you believe for a moment that policemen coming across the street, going through a guy's gate, across his property, and arresting him off of his front porch and charging him with drunken disorderly conduct. There's nothing about this guy that merits or warrants an arrest for drunk. He's drunk on his own property. He's got a right to be drunk on his own property. That's the one place, you know, in our castles where we have a right to be drunk. Disorderly, didn't cause anybody any trouble. He just offended the cop, and the cop says, I'm going to fix this guy. And in the process, you stir up hate and discontent. Now let's go over to Iraq. American soldiers are bleeding and dying over there, young men, who should be home here in Cleveland and Columbus, Ohio, doing their thing, taking their girls to the movies and living life. And instead, they're getting killed and shot up and crippled and maimed for life. Thousands of them now. And they're over there, and they're being told every day, you're here to make the world safe for democracy. That's what we told our troops over in World War II in Europe. We're over here to make the world safe for democracy. We're over here to throw a terrible tyrant out of office and give these people democracy. Listen, the people of Iraq don't want democracy. They don't want Americans. It's true they didn't like Saddam Hussein any more than half the Americans like George Bush. But what would you think if the Iraqis came over here and threw George Bush out of office? All you Democrats would be dancing in the streets and jumping up and down and saying, God, thank God that, you know, no, the Iraqis stay over here. See, they don't go back home. They stay right here. And they want to impose upon us an Islamic fundamentalist government because we don't know what's good for us over here. We're deceived. And they're going to give us the good life. They're going to give us what they perceive to be what we want. You know, boys and girls, there's this old adage that says, you know, you want to know how the other guy's thinking, just walk a mile in his moccasin. Boys and girls, we're not in Iraq because we like Iraqis. They're nothing but a bunch of camel jockeys running around in the desert, and we all know that. We're there to steal their oil. They're sitting on top of 25% of the world's known proven reserves. We're not there because we just feel real good about helping people. If that were the case, we would be in Iran. We would be in North Korea. We would be in Sudan. I mean, there's a million people in Sudan that need to be protected from their government. You don't see us running around out there in Sudan protecting a million blacks from their government. We don't give a damn about those million blacks in Darfur, Sudan. The North Koreans are in the process of killing a half a million North Koreans. We don't care. We don't give a rat's rectum about the people of North Korea. Now let's come off of this pious horse, Pucky. And let's get intelligent for a change. We are in Iraq because those people have a lot of money. They've got a lot of oil. And Saddam Hussein, in 1991, would not give up his demand that he get paid for that oil in gold. And he would not join the World Bank. That was the cause of the 1991 Gulf War. Now the second round over here has to do with oil again. Oil. Weapons of mass destruction is merely the cover story for the theft of those people's oil. And they hate us. And they see themselves as patriots and freedom fighters. They don't see themselves as insurgents and terrorists. Any more than Americans would see Americans fighting for America against Iraqis who are trying to impose upon us their system of government and their values. I mean, that's just where reality's at. And these blacks in the inner cities that are singing these songs are people who are frustrated with the system, who don't know how to deal with reality. And so they go out and kill you. All right, hang on. We got to take a break here. We'll be right back right after this. So don't go away. There's more to come. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs are the second and the eighth planks of the Communist Manifesto. These two programs call for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing, and Social Security is a social welfare scheme that takes the place of strict liability and individual responsibility. The income tax requires of us that we serve two masters in violation of Matthew 6, verse 24. The income tax requires of us that we rob God in violation of Malachi 3, verse 8. The income tax requires of us that we commit idolatry in violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. The income tax requires of us that we use unjust weights and balances in violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. And the income tax requires of us that we sign contracts with foreign and alien gods, we call those governments, in violation of Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. And Social Security violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. And Social Security violates the 10th commandment by appealing to our lust and greed. And then we're taught to call that income redistribution. Now, the scripture calls it just what it is, covetousness and theft, in violation of Exodus 20, verses 15 and 17. Now, the God of the Bible gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way of life in our Constitution and Bill of Rights, and that's why I contend that you and I ought to learn how to practice that better way of life. Now, for information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at area code 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Click on to the email and then send an email request for your free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, going on in rap, cops and crime, clarifying the cop killer controversy, Mark S. Hamm and Jeff Farrell add something to this discussion on rap music and violence. They start off cop killer in a cultural context. As a starting point, Martin offers a truncated and distorted description of rap's gestation and largely misses the music's social and cultural meanings. To suggest, as does Martin, that rap is a culmination of the course charted by Elvis Presley is to commit a double fallacy. First, Martin's characterization of Elvis Presley as the founder of rock and roll and Bill Haley as the country's first composer of rock and roll constitutes a racist and revisionist rock history, which curiously excludes Louis Jordan, Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, and a host of other black musicians and musical traditions which established the essentials of rock and roll. This sort of myopic ethnic insensitivity echoes in Martin's subsequent claim that rap is primitive music. Second, Martin compounds these sorts of mistakes by tracing rap's lineage to rock and roll, or apparently white southern rockability. Rap artists have in fact explicitly denied this lineage, and early rappers, for example, sang "No More Rock and Roll" and rappers Public Enemy have attacked Elvis Presley and his racist attitude specifically. To draw a parallel between white southern rockability of the mid-1950s and today's black urban rap is therefore analogous to comparing Joshua's trumpets at the Battle of Jericho with the Wagnerian operas of Nazi stormtroopers, or to equating the horn calls which led Caesar's troops into England with the thrash metal of slaughter and Megadeth absorbed by U.S. Air Force pilots during a bombing raid during the Persian Gulf War. Other than to say that militaries have routinely used music to lead soldiers into battle, the analogies have little value. What Martin's analysis lacks is the crucial historical specificity and sociological contextualization, the framework of conceptual clarity and appreciation necessary to explain the complex relationship between particular forms of music, popular culture dynamics, and incidents of violence. Well, most commentators, in fact, locate the beginnings of rap, or more broadly, hip-hop, in the funkadelic period of the mid to late 1970s, a la George Clinton, Parliament, P-Funk, Curtis Blow, and Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five. Evolving from this musical base, rap gained its popular appeal in the grim ghettos of New York City. First in the Bronx and then in Harlem and Brooklyn, rap caught the sounds of the city, capturing the aggressive boasts and stylized threats of street-tough black males. And by the mid-1980s, rap was injected into the American mainstream by way of Run-DMC's version of Aerosmith's Walk This Way and other crossover hits. MC Hammer, Tone, Locke, Public Enemy, Ice-T, N.W.A., De La Soul, and Legion, and a legion of others soon followed. Infusing rap with R&B, jazz, and other influences, and introducing rap to worldwide audiences of all ethnicities. In ignoring this rich history, Martin misunderstands both the aesthetics and the politics of rap. Martin, for example, leaps to the extraordinary conclusion that rap is a vile and dangerous form of cultural expression, a primitive music that attacks every shared value that has bound our society together for more than 200 years. From within this sort of uncritical consensus model of contemporary society, Martin then locates this portentous social threat in a wider cultural crisis. The trend in American rock music for the last decade, he argues, has been to promote ever more vile, deviant, and sociopathic behaviors. And if this trend is not reversed, Martin concludes, every American is at risk of losing his property and his life to criminals. A careful analysis of rock's lyrical diversity and social effects would, of course, undermine these sorts of hysterical generalizations. A careful analysis of rap music's lyrical content and cultural context likewise reveals a very different social dynamic. Message rap or gangster rap, the focus of the remainder of this essay, deals head-on with universal themes of injustice and oppression, themes which have both bound and divided U.S. society from its inception. But at the same time, gangster rap is proudly localized as ghetto music, thematizing its commitment to the black urban experience. This is also, by the way, part of what constitutes rap's appeal for millions of middle-class white kids who have never been inside a black ghetto. In fact, rap focuses on aspects of ghetto life that most adult whites, middle-class blacks, and self-protective police officers and politicians would rather ignore. Rappers record the everyday experiences of pimping, prostitution, child abandonment, AIDS, and drugs, as in Ice-T's anti-drug song, I'm Your Pusher. Other rappers deal with deeper institutionalized problems such as poverty, racial conflict, revisionist history books, the demand for trivial consumer goods, the exploitation of disenfranchised blacks through military service and black dislocation from Africa. And still other rap songs lay bare the desperate and often violent nature of ghetto life as played out in individual and collective fear. Sadly, and these fantasy street killings and significantly oppressive harassment by police patrols. Now, these themes are packed in the aesthetic of black ghetto life, an aesthetic which features verbal virtuosity as a powerful symbol in the negotiation of social status. Rap is developed from U.S. and Jamaican verbal street games like signifying the dozens and toasting. Rap, in turn, encases this verbal jousting in the funky beat of rhythms reworked through the formal musical devices which give birth to the rap sound, sampling, scratching, mixing, and punch phrasing. Hardly the primitive or stripped music which Martin describes. The result of this complex artistic process is a sensual, badass gangster who won't be happy till the dancers are wet, out of control, and wildly possessed by the rapper's divine right to rhyme and ironies, ambiguities, and fears of urban ghetto life. Ice-T hit the deck. Musically, rap certainly emerges more from studio funk and street poetry than the blues, but like Sonny Boy Williamson, Muddy Waters, Willie Dixon, and a host of other great post-war U.S. blues men, Ice-T and other rappers twist and shout from within a world of crippling adversity. Well, what do you think? You think that rap music is good or bad? On the one hand, you've got the former chief of police of a city and the head of the national chiefs of police. He says it's degenerate, that it's animalistic, barbaric, and it calls for the killing of people. Now, you know, we've got a law that says thou shalt do no murder. I know. We live in a pretty violent society here in the United States, but after all, we still have that one law, and we're still enforcing it in our secular law. We don't enforce thou shalt not commit adultery, but we are still enforcing thou shalt not steal to some degree, and thou shalt do no murder. On the other hand, the two other authors here, Mark S. Hamm and Jeff Farrow, they take cop killer in a cultural context and they say, gee, it's just an expression. And it's totally harmless. And it's really good. And it's artistic. And we ought to have more of it. Well, there's your controversy. On the one hand, you have people that are telling you what we need is more abortion. And on the other hand, you've got people that say, no, we shouldn't have it at all. Then you've got, on the one hand, those that say, you know, we need more stem cell research and more Dolly's the sheep and or Dolly the sheep. And we need more experimentation. And on the other hand, you get people that say, no, we shouldn't have any of it. It's all bad and it's all ought to be done away with. And this is what makes the controversy, isn't it? Does anybody ever go to the Bible and ask, what does God think about music? What does God think about stem cell research? What did God think? Did he give us any guidance on this thing of abortion? Is there any law that, you know, we could go to that would tell us how to behave? Well, the answer is yes to all of those. The Bible has instruction on every aspect of human existence and life. We don't follow it. We don't practice it. And our society today reflects it. Problems that we're wrestling and grappling with today, we didn't have 100 years ago. We didn't have an abortion problem 100 years ago. We didn't have a rap music problem 100 years ago. We wouldn't have tolerated it. But today we've got the problem. And the violent society today. Yes, American society has always been violent and had its Billy the Kids. We had a Billy the Kid that's been immortalized today. We've got gangs that shoot people off of street corners for sport. In fact, so many of them, we don't even keep track of them anymore. Hang on, we'll be back with more on music and IQ when we return. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Well, welcome to Tax Freedom Day. That occurs about May 12th every year. It means that you work all of January, February, March, April, and a third of May to pay your income tax for the year. And that's not all. Then you get to work the rest of May and all of June to pay your withholding taxes. Now, the income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal enterprises. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank. The income tax and Social Security also violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Scriptures, including our English common law. Now, about 14 million Americans are no longer enrolled in Social Security, and more are opting out every day. That's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Why don't you call, write, or wire today for my free general law CD package? To order your free general law CD package, just call direct 417-273-4967, or you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click on to the email machine, and then send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're taking on this thing of music. Is it good for you or bad? What does it do to you? Does it create or cause violence? Well, let's take a look at the concepts that I originally started with, and that is, does music increase your IQ? Is there a difference between rap music, rock and roll, heavy metal, or Bach and Beethoven and Handel? And the answer, it seems, that researchers are finding is, yes, it does. Now, remember, hard rock music causes violence in laboratory animals. Remember, David Merrill, a high school student from Suffolk, Virginia, won top honors in regional and state science fairs for his experiment involving mice, a maze, and hard rock and roll music, and soft melodic music like Handel and Mozart. After establishing a baseline of about 10 minutes for the mice to navigate the maze, David started playing music 10 hours a day, then put the mice through the maze 3 times a week for 3 weeks. In his findings, the control group mice, which did not listen to any music, were able to cut 5 minutes off of their time. The mice that listened to classical music cut 8.5 minutes off of their time. And the mice that listened to hard rock and roll music took 20 minutes longer to navigate the maze. And David said he had to cut his project short because all of the hard rock mice killed each other. None of the classical mice did that at all. Now remember, I reported that to you here on the last program. Now tuck that one away, animal studies. And let's take a look here at music research. Now, just a few of the many research findings that show the effects of music upon our mind and body. Results of research carried out by Anne Savin and Southampton University using Mozart classical orchestral compositions. The findings show that when the pupils, all of whom had special education needs and emotional and behavioral difficulties, when they were played Mozart orchestral compositions during normal science lessons, there was a significant drop in all physiological parameters and a resultant improvement in behavior. Observed coordination was improved. All students completed the set tasks neatly and quietly. Their concentration span lasted throughout the 45-minute lessons, and there was no attention-seeking behavior. Now let's take a look at the musical fetus. At what age do musical capabilities first appear? Well, perhaps at birth or soon thereafter. The functional development of the auditory system in utero. Peter G. Hepper, reporting in the Irish Journal of Psychology, 1991, studied neonates 2 to 4 days of age who had been exposed to the theme tune of a popular TV program while their mothers were pregnant. When the same tune was presented after birth, the neonates exhibited changes in heart rate and movements. More remarkably,
fetuses of 29 to 37 weeks gestational age also showed specific behavioral responses to tunes played earlier in pregnancy. In both experiments, behavioral responses were specific to the tune to which they had been exposed. These results would seem to indicate that the learning and remembering of a melody can occur not only before birth, but actually before or at the beginning of the third trimester. Now, music alters children's brainwaves. There's great interest in the possibility that music produces reorganization of brain function, and that such change could be detected by analysis of the electroencephalogram, it's called an EEG, which measures your brain waves. Now, Russian investigators have provided the first evidence of these processes in children. Writing in the journal Human Physiology, 1996, volume 22, T.N. Malenarico, I guess that's the way to pronounce that, M-A-L-Y, Malenarico, I guess that's Malenarico, and his co-authors played classical music 1 hour a day over 6 months to four-year-old children in a preschool setting. Then, a control group had no exposure to music, but simply the normal classroom sounds. The classical music group had an increase in a part of the alpha rhythm frequency band and greater similarities or coherence between different regions of the cerebral cortex, most pronounced in the frontal lobes. Greater coherence is thought by some workers to indicate better cooperation among brain regions, but others view it as typical of increased relaxation. A particularly noteworthy aspect of this report is that the EEG changes occurred in a passive listening situation in which the children were not required to pay attention to the music. Whether the effects are specific to a particular type of music remains to be studied. Also needed are controls for mere exposure to novel sounds. Now, does listening to Mozart affect spatial IQ? In a previous well-publicized experiment published back in 1993, Rauscher and colleagues of the University of California at Irvine reported that listening to Mozart compared to relaxation instructions or silence produced a brief but significant increase in performance of a spatial IQ task involving mental manipulations of folded cut paper in college students that was reported in Nature in 1993. Now, this has drawn sufficient interest to produce at least one attempt at replication. In 1994, Stau and colleagues of the University of Auckland, New Zealand, examined the effects of listening to Mozart, popular dance music, or silence on a related test of intelligence. They found no effects. Thus, it would appear that the original report of Rauscher et al. Was an error. However, recently, Rauscher et al. Have replicated and extended their findings. In a series called Neurosite Letters, 1995, in this study, they used the same task as in their first experiment, but extended the types of listening experienced. 79 college students were divided into three groups. Silence, Mozart's Sonata for Two Pianos, K448, and the same piece that produced the positive results in 1993's study. And then a group that heard a minimalist work by Philip Glass. Well, only the Mozart group showed a significant increase in spatial IQ scores. In further sub-studies, it was found that listening to a taped short story or dance music did not enhance test scores. Therefore, the facilitation of a measure of spatial IQ seems to be specific to some aspect of the Mozart piece rather than music per se, or attending to a story. Although the failure of the Stau group to find an effect needs to be reconciled with these findings, the Rauscher et al. Replication and extension does provide strong support for their view that listening to Mozart specifically facilitates spatial reasoning and increased IQ. Now let's take a look at music and memory. In 1982, researchers from the University of North Texas performed a three-way test on postgraduate students to see if music could help in memorizing vocabulary words. The students were divided into three groups. Each group was given three tests, a pre-test, a post-test, and a test a week after the first two tests. All of these tests were identical. Group 1 was read the words with Handel's Water Music in the background. They were also asked to imagine the words. Group 2 was read the same words, also with Handel's Water Music in the background. Group 2 was not asked to imagine the words. Group 3 was only read the words, was not given any background music, and was also not asked to imagine the words. The results from the test, or the first two tests, showed that groups 1 and 2 had much better scores than group 3. The results from the third test a week later showed that group 1 performed much better than groups 2 or 3. However, simply using music while learning does not absolutely guarantee recall, but can possibly improve it. Background music in itself is not a part of the learning process, but it does enter into memory along with the information learned. Recall is also better when the same music used for learning is used during recall. Also, tempo appears to be a key of music's effect on memory. Now, not all music is beneficial. An Australian physician and psychiatrist, Dr. John Diamond, found a direct link between muscle strength and weakness in music. He discovered that all of the muscles in the entire body go weak when subjected to the stopped, anapestic beat of music from hard rock musicians, including Led Zeppelin, Alice Cooper, Queen, The Doors, Janis Joplin, Bachman, Turner, Overdrive, and the band Dr. Diamond found another effect of the anapestic beat. He called it a switching of the brain. Dr. Diamond said this switching occurs when the actual symmetry between both of the cerebral hemispheres is destroyed, causing alarm in the body along with lessened work performance, learning and behavioral problems in children, and a general malaise in adults. In addition to harmful irregular beats in rock music, shrill frequencies prove to also be harmful to the body. Bob Larson, a Christian minister and former rock musician, remembers that in the 1970s, teens would bring raw eggs to a rock concert and then put the raw eggs on the front of the stage. The eggs would be hard-boiled by the music before the end of the concert and could be eaten. Dr. Earl W. Flausdorf and Dr. Leslie A. Chambers showed that proteins in a liquid medium were coagulated when subjected to piercing, high-pitched sounds. Did you get that? The eggs would be hard-boiled by the music before the end of the concert, and they could be eaten. And Dr. Earl W. Flausdorf and Dr. Leslie A. Chambers showed that proteins in a liquid medium, such as an egg, were coagulated when subjected to piercing, high-pitched sounds. Hang on, we'll take another break, and we'll be right back with more on this thing of heavy rock music right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. Traditional American values are individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. These foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. We covet our neighbor's property, and we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes. We practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods called government, and we're not getting away with these crimes either. We're now paying up to 74% of everything we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged homes owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt. We Americans owe a $7 trillion national debt. And then we're surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations. Our financial institutions are leveraged out to $60 trillion worldwide, for which we're the surety underwriters for. And our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. And then we live from paycheck to paycheck. And then we're taught to call all of that prosperity. Well, you know, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way in our Constitution and Bill of Rights. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life than income tax and Social Security, why don't you call and ask for my free 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and then just send an email request for that free general law CD package, or call direct 417-273-4967. Experiments that are done with plants and animals with this music, both Mozart and other forms of classical music, shows a positive and beneficial result, whereas when it's done with hard rock or heavy acid, what they call it, heavy metal, I guess is what they call it, drives me nuts. I can be driving down the street and listen to that heavy metal or I don't know what else you'd call it. It goes boom, boom, boom. God, you can hear this guy. Sounds like tanks coming up from behind you. And these people always roll their windows down, you know, so that you can be sure to hear it. Evidently, either the music is too loud and they have to roll the music or roll the windows down to let the music out, or they want to make sure that they share it with everybody else. Have you noticed that? Well, tests on plants and animals, or tests on the effects of music on living organisms besides humans, have shown that special pieces of music, including the Blue Danube, aid laying hens lay more eggs. Music can also help cows to yield more milk. Researchers from Canada and the former Soviet Union found that wheat will grow faster when exposed to special ultrasonic and musical sounds. Rats were tested by psychologists to see how they would react to box music and rock music. The rats were placed into two different boxes. Rock music was played in one of the boxes, while box music was played in the other box. The rats could choose to switch boxes through a tunnel that connected both boxes. Almost all of the rats chose to go into the box with the Bach music, even after the type of music was switched from one box to the other. Then there are the harmful effects of rock music on neuronal branching patterns in mice. Physicist Harvey Bird and neurobiologist Gervasia Schreckenberg subjected different groups of mice to the sound of traditional voodoo drumming to Strauss waltzes and to silence, and then tested each group's ability to navigate through a maze to get food. All of the music was played continuously at low volumes to eliminate possible behavioral effects from loud sounds generally. The groups that were subjected to either silence or Strauss waltzes had no problem learning the maze, with the Strauss waltz group having a slight edge in performance. However, the voodoo group performed progressively worse over the period of time that they had been exposed to the music, and eventually became so disoriented that they became unable to complete the maze at all. These mice were also hyperactive, aggressive, and often engaged in cannibalistic behavior. On dissection of the brains of these mice, highly abnormal neuronal growth patterns were found in the hippocampus region, with excessive dendritic branches growing out in all directions, yet making few connections to the other neurons. The hippocampus region is known to be important in learning and memory formation. Significant increases in messenger RNA, which is involved in memory formation, were also found in the mice. This latter effect probably corresponds to the increase in dendritic branching, as if the brains were persistently attempting to make sense out of the sound stimulus, but they could not. Now, a number of commentators have interpreted these findings to condemn all forms of rock music. While this does not necessarily follow logically from the Bird and Schreckenberg results, the Retallick experiments, see section 2.5 below, on plants at least, suggest that many types of rock music may be harmful to human health. Some researchers and health professionals have suggested that the electronic distortion used by many rock bands might be a factor, in addition to the common use of anapestic rhythms, that is, persistently syncopated with two short beats and a long beat, then a pause. Well, okay, there's the story on, or part of the story. We've got a couple of minutes left here. Let me give you a couple of three more quickies here. An Australian physician and psychiatrist, Dr. John Diamond, found a direct link between muscle strength weakness and music. He discovered that all of the muscles in the entire body go weak when subjected to the stopped anapestic beat, a music from hard rock musicians, including Led Zeppelin, Alice Cooper, Queen, The Doors, Janis Joplin, Bachman, Turner, Overdrive. I guess that's Turner Overdrive and the band. Dr. Diamond found another effect of the anapestic beat, they call it. He called it a switching of the brain, and Dr. Diamond said that this switching occurs when the actual symmetry between both of the cerebral hemispheres is destroyed, causing alarm in the body, along with lessened work performance, learning, and behavioral problems in children, and a general malaise in adults. In addition to harmful irregular beats in rock music, shrill frequencies prove to also be harmful to the body. Bob Larson, a Christian minister and former rock musician, remembers that in the 70s, teens would bring raw eggs to a rock concert and put them on the front of the stage. The eggs would be hard-boiled by the music before the end of the concert and could be eaten. And Dr. Earl W. Floorsdorf and Dr. Leslie A. Chambers showed that proteins in a liquid medium were coagulated when subjected to piercing, high-pitched sounds. It makes me wonder, what could that do to a human's brain or to a human's body? I mean, just mull it over a little bit and ask yourself, what do you think of that? Now, a study from Pennsylvania State University reported that students who listened to the to the most rock music had the highest levels of depression scores on a psychological test, reports Valerie N. Stratton, the assistant professor of psychology in USA Today, April 12, 1994. So in tests on children in high school, you find that Pennsylvania State University reported that students who listened to the most rock music also had the highest levels of depression scores on psychological tests. So you tuck that one away in your heart. Heavy metal, rap, and adolescent behavior. There's widespread concern about the possible negative effects on behavior of listening to certain types of music, particularly in adolescence. There seems not to be a great deal of systematic study of this topic, but a recent report by Kevin J. Took and David S. Weiss in the journal Adolescence, published in 1994, is very relevant. Now, the authors studied the relationships between listening to heavy metal and rap music and adolescent psychological turmoil. The subjects were 12 to 18 years of age. The average was 14.6 years. They were equally divided between the sexes, who were patients under some treatment for various behavioral and psychological problems at a military medical center's adolescent medicine unit or similar facility. Their parents were attached to the military. Questionnaires revealed differences between teenagers who performed heavy metal and rap compared to others who did not. They did poor on their school work. They had poorer school grades, more behavioral problems in school, and more sexual activity, drug and alcohol use, and arrests. The relationship was stronger for males than females. One obvious conclusion is that the music caused, at least to some extent, the behavioral problems. However, further detailed analysis of each student's background revealed that the most troubled group exhibited serious behavioral problems in elementary school, generally before they started listening to heavy metal and rock. Thus, troubled students may be drawn to these types of music, and no clear causative relationship exists. Generalizations from these findings would be premature. The sample does not represent a cross-section of adolescents in the United States, and the reliance of questionnaires, even with reliability checks used in the study, is subject to some error, and the possibility that music could promote problems in already troubled teenagers was not investigated. More research is needed. Well, I might go on to say that while more research might be needed, has it ever occurred to us that there's a causal relationship? I don't think anybody's paid much attention to that one way or the other. I've heard people arguing over the last, oh, I don't know, 30 or 40 years that this music, this rock and roll is bad for you and so on, and I tend to agree. There's a big difference between classical music and the music that's being played today, and I can remember as a child, we didn't have rock and roll, we didn't have heavy metal, etc. We didn't have nearly the behavioral problems that we've got today either. So tuck it away in your heart. That's where the music story lies. It certainly wouldn't hurt you any if you just ignored it, would it? All right, we're just about out of time. I want you to remember that you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website at georgegordon.org. Well, there's the signal. It says our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, of course, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.